pleased to introduce an old friend, Mae Mendelson. Mae and I met years and years ago when we were both serving on the board of the YWCA of Oahu. And since then, she's been extremely active in a number of organizations, but is probably best known for her work as executive director of the Hawaii Intergenerational Network, and certainly as state president of the Hawaii AARP. She's gone on to serve on the national board of AARP, where she's on their governance and nominating committees. And I'm so pleased she was able to be with us today, because she's flying out this afternoon to Washington for AARP meetings. So very pleased she could make time to be with us today, because she has launched a new company called Travel and Learn. This company will be a vehicle for encouraging intergenerational study tours. I think it's very exciting, and I'm very interested to hear more about it. So please, welcome Mae Mendelson.
I'm going to start with some handouts, but I do want to thank Kokua Council for inviting me to speak today. And on this lovely, warm afternoon with the breezes coming in, I decided we'll keep this light, and because I think that intergenerational work is really heart work, and that's what I'm going to be talking about. But first, I have some things to hand out. I don't know if I have enough of the handouts to go around, so please share them. I didn't realize this was going to be recorded for the website, because there are some visuals involved in this. But you may be wondering, why are you getting pages from coloring books as well as some markers? Well, what I want to start with is the premise that integrating older adults with children is something that we should have on our mind all the time as we think of activities, as we think about programs. And what they've done in Japan is, I was there a couple of years ago, and I go quite often, and I picked up a copy of the Yomiuri Shimbun, and there was this marvelous article about older adults going to bookstores along with younger people and buying coloring books and taking lessons on how to color and having coloring contests. And the impetus for this, for the droves of people going, was a study done by a doctor who basically said coloring may contribute to brain rehabilitation. It may ward off dementia. And I thought that was interesting, because I'm a teacher, but not so much of young children anymore. But we were always telling the children, take this blank piece of paper and draw creatively. And now they're saying coloring and coloring books is a good thing. What this study shows, and some of you have the actual article, is that the selection of the picture, the selection of the colors, and the coloring, each of those stimulate a different part of the brain. And by doing this, you are activating and keeping the brain very active. And so here in Japan, they've included this in a bookstore, someplace accessible to multitudes of generations, and have created an intergenerational activity, which is my theme today. How do we integrate the generations in an easy way, in bringing them together, because we know that the outcomes and the results are good for both? So what I have put on the table are some crayons, some markers, because what I do with my students at Hawaii Pacific University is, before we even begin to review midterm and finals, I say, this is going to open you up to hear me a little better, to listen, to absorb the material. So it's okay because otherwise you might fall sound asleep. It's perfectly okay for you to color while I am speaking. And what I have found is often at the end of class, some of the students have become so obsessive about coloring that I have to put it away. So even though we're saying that it relieves stress, it may be stressful for them because they want to finish that picture before class is over. So I offer you right up front an intergenerational activity. And I hope some of you will color and be getting those brain cells snapping and the synapses connecting. All right. What I want to talk about today is the fact that intergenerational programs are not just feel-good activities, that it's a field that has been researched. We have had demonstration projects here. There are extraordinary efforts to move the intergenerational processes into the mainstream by programs and policies. And so I'm going to start by talking a little bit about what are the goals of intergenerational programs, how are they working here in the United States, across the world, and then finally talk a little bit about what I and my colleagues have decided to do in this area of intergenerational work and invite you all to be a part of it if you would like. The term intergenerational has traditionally meant the bookend generations of the older adult. We can start at 50. That's a good place to start since everybody gets the automatic sign up and be a member in AARP at age 50. And the young, and that can be youth and children. That certainly has been the traditional definition, bringing the older generation together with the youngest. But today, discussions within the field include family caregivers and grandparents raising grandchildren. But today, I am going to focus on the community and institution-based intergenerational approaches in the examples that I give. By the way, if I could just digress, there apparently is today an article in USA Today that will begin a study, the results of studies on long-term care. And what they have determined is that family caregivers in the United States are a resource worth $350 billion. So I think that's, I was hoping to pick up the article before coming here, but I didn't have a chance. Yes, I understand that that's today. So the goals of intergenerational work are multifaceted and they include the following: helping older adults age with dignity by giving them opportunities to mentor, to tutor, to assist young people, to transfer what I call the wisdoms and the skills that we have accumulated over the years, certainly the knowledge, and to make that occur in natural settings. I think that's an important part of it. The second goal is to enhance social support and interactions in a way that we know contribute to the mental, emotional, and psychological health of both older adults and children. And a third goal is to connect the generations so that children and youth can begin to understand the aging process and by the interaction learn not to fear aging or not to fear older people. Finally, there's a new goal within the intergenerational field, which is to create environments and neighborhoods that are safe and enhance, not limit, mobility options and provide choices in living arrangements so that people can remain in their homes or neighborhoods. AARP calls this livable communities and has focused on mobility and housing. Others have added the desire for community spaces that bring generations together. An example I saw in the Netherlands was an assisted living facility where the downstairs was actually filled with commercial space. There was a restaurant, a child care center, beauty salons. This brought non-residents into the facility and then mingling with the residents in the shared space. One of the things that I have found with intergenerational work is that people feel very tuned into it because as I said, they sense that it's a feel-good activity. Who can be against bringing the older generation to the younger? What I'd like to pose today is that it's essential that the isolation of the generations is actually creating and impairing, creating a situation that is hurting our communities and hurting our ability to transfer to future generations. I guess my point is it's essential. And I'm going to share with you a pyramid. Dr. Joseph Coughlin of the Age Lab at MIT presented this pyramid to the AARP Board of Directors, and it's called the Age Lab Innovations Map. And he was really using this as we would use Maslow's hierarchy, that at the base you would look at needs, and then before you can aspire to a higher level, that you must meet those needs. And so this particular innovation map is looking at innovations along one sector and quality aging needs on the other. As I looked at this, I said to myself, you know, I can really use this to get across the intergenerational perspective. And how I found this is that if you take a look at it, the domains of connectivity, contribution, and legacy at the top of the pyramid are those that are most important in connecting the generations. But if we also look at this as a continuum or a cycle, we can go to the top where we have legacy and say, if we have opportunities for older people to connect, to contribute, and to leave a legacy, in that process, we connect back to impacting health and safety. So he had a pyramid, and the more I thought about it, I said, for me, it's a circle. It really is closing the loop. And the way we can do that is through intergenerational work. But I started with this particular pyramid because it started me thinking, okay, this fits for me. So what are we doing in the intergenerational field? Well, to reach goal one, which I think is the idea of leaving a legacy, we have school-based volunteer and mentor programs, and I think these are the best known of our efforts. I think about foster grandparents, in which the elders really work with young children in the schools, Experience Corps. Here in Hawaii, Hawaii Intergenerational Network started a program called Fellows. And Fellows is still going strong in the Hawaii Charter School. But at one time, we had 21 programs. And I see some people here who are very much involved with that effort. Other efforts, RSVP is certainly one. But I also want to posit the fact that intergenerational mentoring and tutoring can happen in the workplace. They can also be a service project overseas with a nonprofit or community, perhaps like an older Peace Corps. So we should open up our minds to all the possibilities, but we've certainly started with some superb efforts. When we think about contributing to health, new efforts have brought children together with Alzheimer's and dementia patients. One of my favorite programs was founded in Nova Scotia. Within this program, high school students work with early stage Alzheimer patients to create memory albums. The students are trained to facilitate the process and to work with the patient and the family. The memory book becomes a gift of remembrance and legacy that has been carefully preserved for future generations within the family. Dr. Mitsumune Tago, who is a physician in Japan and director of a social welfare corporation and clinical director of a wellness medical center, takes dementia patients within his facility on neighborhood patrols. And he says it has prevented crime just by seeing the people. He said they like to wander. So now we, he said, we put T-shirts on them and armbands and we take them out. And just their presence has reduced crime. So there are a lot of ways to look at integrating older people into the community that benefit both the community and the individual. What is very important, though, I believe, in this area of mental and physical health programs is to ensure that the programs and activities are designed with rigor and are sustained. And what I mean about that is that we now are finally getting empirical evidence on how these programs can really benefit seniors. One that has been mentioned was an arts program that was conducted in three American cities. Elder Share of the Arts Program in Brooklyn, Center for Elders and Youth in the Arts in San Francisco, and the Levine Music in D.C. They did what is so often difficult to do in the nonprofits, and that's using an intervention and control group comprised of participants with an average age of 80 years old. There were 150 in the control group and 150 in the experimental group. The researchers examined the constructs of social control and social engagement for those taking the arts program. All results were statistically significant. The intervention group reported better health, less doctor visits, a drop in medication usage, less falls, greater improvements on depression, loneliness, and morale than was reported by the control group. What made the difference? The difference was attributed to the fact that the intervention group took a real art course by trained professionals and were also given opportunities to discuss the artwork, to social network in between. So they were also processing what they did. The control group were given general community center activities. So one of the things we've been seeing is because people say, well, how do you know it's more than just being a nice thing to do? We are beginning to see what we've always said, that it can really make a difference in the health of older people. Now, how about younger people? Because we've said that intergenerational programs have to benefit both. For young children, I looked to the work we did through Hawaii Intergenerational Network called SCIP, Senior Kupuna in the Preschool Program. And in that particular program, in six preschools, we put older adults into these programs with the intent of working specifically with the young children who had behavior problems. These were not special needs children. These were children with behavior problems, hitting, spitting, kicking, temper tantrums. I worked with Dr. Michael Chang, whom many of you know, and within 9 months, we found the behaviors had been extinguished, the ones that we had focused on. They were gone. Now, we know part of this is that we could see in the classroom that the young children were very attentive and very respectful of the older person. And the teacher said, I know this is different because I've had college students in here, and they tend to ramp up the activity, and the kids get all hyperactive. But here, with the older person, the child will go up close to whisper, and the older person will lower their voice. And when they say, let's work together and put the blocks away before we move on to reading, the children go, okay. Now, that sounds very idyllic, and I know that's not always true because my grandchild doesn't say okay to me, but we were very careful in using college students to observe what was happening. We decided to really make this a project that we could say, do we make a difference? And we're very proud of that. But as I had said, that's not always necessary. But I think when you're talking about behavior changes you're hoping for or health indicator changes, it's very important to be careful about the program design and the outcomes that you want. I'm going to talk a little bit now about this neighborhoods, livable communities. We have examples throughout the world of what works and doesn't work. We know that neighborhoods designed for mixed use so that people can walk to recreation and shops on wide sidewalks and safe crosswalks benefit old and young alike. We know that because we know that Hawaii has the highest fatality rate in pedestrian deaths among elder people. And I was one of the AARP volunteers who stood out here at Nu'uanu Vineyard and couldn't get across the entire street before the light changed and it started to flicker. What is important is that we know that communities with a diversity of transportation options allow us to remain in our homes, but give us choices beyond the automobile. This was something new to me. National figures show that more than one in five persons, or 21% of Americans aged 65 and older, do not drive. The average male will outlive his driving abilities by 6 years, and the average female by 10 years. Non-drivers tell us they miss doing something they want to do 33% of the time compared to 2% of the time by drivers. And we also know that once a driver becomes a non-driver, trips tend to be limited to the doctor, hospital, or to buy food. The majority of my intergenerational work today is international, and when I come home to Hawaii, I tend to wonder how we could do more to improve intergenerational interactions here in our state. We have a base value of ohana, yet still have policies, programs, and neighborhoods that isolate the generations. We started in Hawaii at Hawaii Intergenerational Network with demonstration projects, and they depended on outside funding to operate. But that was important because we wanted to use them to test some of our thoughts about what would work and wouldn't work. But what we want next are ongoing intergenerational programs where it is an integral part of an organization and that they just simply say, this is what we will do. We're going to have a youth recreation program. Is there something here where we can include seniors? Is there some way we can include them? All right. The other is, and I sort of see this on a continuum, what we need to aspire to are those intergenerational experiences. They're simply a way of life. Right. And a lot of that will be very dependent on our ability to get around our neighborhood. I think that's very important. My Japanese colleagues say that a major difference between Japan's intergenerational movement and ours is that we focus on need and then design a program or develop a policy. In Japan, they are embedding the approach through supportive networks and institutions that integrate older adults and children in as many ways as possible. Senior centers become multi-generational centers with some integrated classes. A shared site in Singapore operates the childcare, adult day services, before and after school care under one management to ensure integrated curriculum, daily activities, and they appoint an intergenerational coordinator to make sure everyone is designing programs together and communicating so that the early childhood specialist and the gerontologist specialist and the nurse are all communicating and not working in their independent silos. The basic value that covers all matter of intergenerational efforts was articulated by Matt Kaplan at an intergenerational conference in Waseda University, and I must mention him because he did found the Hawaii Intergenerational Network here in Hawaii. He says, we are better off when there are open lines of communication, caring, and support among the generations. My own journey in intergenerational work has brought me to a new business called Travel and Learn. But it really is based in my own family legacy. My mother took each of her grandchildren to Japan. Children range in age from 15 to 41 years. And when we did a video at the time of her memorial service, it was this trip that each child took that they talked about. And I asked them, well, what are some of the things you remember with Grandma? What did you learn from Grandma? And every single one of them said, the importance of ki. I said, yes? They said, yes, to be aware of what's around you, to see what others need, and to anticipate and act. I was not only astounded because I knew when my mother told me about ki, I resented it. But when Grandma told her grandchildren about ki, they absorbed it and they remembered it as her legacy to them, How do we act as a part of a global community? I think there's a rite of passage with aging with its own milestones, but we haven't articulated enough common markers as a society. And I think what I mean is we come into the world and we get a birth certificate and we go to school and we get graduation ceremonies, and then some of us will marry and we have marriage certificates, and there are these milestones, these rites of passage. I thought of two when you become older. One is certainly getting the AARP card at 50, and the other is Medicare at 65. I thought, well, so that became my marker, and I decided that I had to start this business before I reached 65, and it would be built on what I have learned from intergenerational work. There are many wonderful opportunities for travel for older adults out there. What comes to mind are grand family travel, elder hostel, AARP passport program. But I didn't want to start a travel agency, but to seek opportunities that Dr. Coughlin calls connection, connectivity, contribution, and legacy. For 18 months now, we have been running the Ohana English Preschool Program in Yokohama, and we have one of the kupunas, Benny Sugarman, here. Hin sends two older adults to teach English in Yokohama preschool for 3 months. We now have 18 graduates of the kupuna program, and we have found that the children are learning English. The adults, some of them meet here monthly, and some also have become a part of an ohana that greets young Japanese students who come to Hawaii. So it is suddenly turned into, as I said, a natural helping social network. This program will expand in April of next year to a new group of preschools created by an organization called Taiken Gakuen. How did this start? It's one of those ideas that is part of a simple, informal conversation. The gentleman who owned Ohana English Preschool came to Seagull Schools, and he said, I want to teach English in my preschools. And he said, but you know, I've had young people come, and they go off and fall in love, and they disappear, and or they show up late. And he said, I can't seem to make this program work. And I said, well, you need to use older Americans. And he said, that sounds like a great idea. And so it's been very successful, and other people have come to see OEP, and they said, we want one of those too. How do we get one of those? So each of the travel experience that my colleagues and I are working on is based on something that we have been doing or some connection that will help us, I think, work globally on intergenerational connections. For example, Matt Kaplan and I made the decision to train as many intergenerational specialists as we can and get these individuals out and working on integrating intergenerational activities into their work and into communities. We decided it had to be simple because older people don't have a year to be doing this. So essentially, you can take a seminar course, you do site visits, what we would call multi-city site visits, and you visit programs. And then you spend about 2 weeks after that mulling over and thinking about what can I do in my organization or my school or in my community. You write it up, and Matt will work with you as a reader, and you'll get 4.5 continuing education credits from Pennsylvania State University. So that was another one of the models we thought of. We are looking at doing that particular program so that those individuals who say, I want to be an intergenerational specialist, can take study tours in Granada, Spain, Singapore, Japan, and Hawaii. The other part of Travel and Learn was my own legacy of a project I started back in 1999 called the World Congress of Youth. At that time, it was called Millennium Young People's Congress, and Susan Kunisaki was very much involved in that, and she's sitting back there. But these were youth from all over the world who were looking at how do we actually help achieve the United Nations Millennium Development Goals. And many of those young people are now out there running nonprofits and action projects. And I'd like to put the word out to anyone who feels that they would like to bring their skill sets to these young people. And it could be as simple as, how do you recruit volunteers? How do you write a fund development proposal? Any type of effort. Some of those young people we'll be bringing here, and some we hope that you would go out to visit. And so those were some of the opportunities we were thinking about. For me, I am not sure what the next milestone would be, but I know that one I will likely share with so many people is that I will care or be cared for. What intergenerational work is not is looking at volunteers or other workers as inexpensive labor, or looking at boomers as a market for more consumer products. The new technology, such as in-home monitoring, is excited and needed, but it is not an answer to alleviate doctor and nurses' shortages. The intergenerational value is high touch. As humans, we need to hug, to embrace, to speak to a real person, to lead a child, and to be listened to in real time. I will close today with an offer to Kokua Council and others to open a dialogue and to help capture the good work being done and to encourage more action in bringing our generations together. For example, I have wanted to visit the Maui Intergenerational Center created by Nisei Veterans that has a child care center on site. Perhaps others in this room would like to join me in that journey. If you are interested in travel and learn activities, please take my card. Perhaps you will come up with an idea of a place you would like to travel to or someone you would like to invite here. The only thing it needs to be is in some way intergenerational, to connect the older people with the younger, because that's really the heart of community. So thank you for asking me to share my thoughts with you today.
I'd be happy to take
questions. Are there any questions?
Yes, ma'am.
I was just saying it makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's a very beautiful approach. I still see we're building large communities. There's one proposal that a lot of segregated people have reached. And I'm not sure the market is
That's a hard one to comment on because I certainly have been involved in a number of processes and planning processes. I think it's simply the fact that people feel that it is something that's going to be difficult to do. There are barriers. Zoning is a barrier. I mean, we know that one of the things we must have is mixed use. But we almost go against the idea that we want commercial and residential next to each other. And I think that part of it is it's a whole new mindset, which, as you know, Marilyn, is the hardest leap to make. So I think we need to enter this notion of multi-generational neighborhoods through the back door, of taking a senior center and say, see, it can be an intergenerational center. And that doesn't mean that, like the YMCA, that you have separate activities. We have to intentionally make space so the groups can get together. I certainly understand what you're saying. I live in Kailua. We've been under construction of a sewer line on Gloncalaheo for over 3 years, and we know that had they put in wide sidewalks, that it would have been accessible for wheelchairs, walkers, mothers with their strollers, but they didn't do it. We can't even ride bikes along there. It's so bumpy now. So I don't know how to answer where the political will needs to come from, but I certainly, like you, have seen a lot of community and individual will. And maybe that's where we have to start. We have to start with what's doable. I certainly, for instance, was very upset when neighborhoods said they didn't want care homes in them. I have a friend living in a community in Virginia, and they invited a program, several programs, Eden in the Home, Eden Project, and Beacon Hill to come and speak with them, because as an aging neighborhood, and she's lived there for 20 or more years, she said, we want to stay here, but we know that it may be unrealistic for us to stay in our home that whole time. How can we put the care home right here so that we can really age in place, move from our home into a shared residence? And I think that's the type of breakthrough we really need to make in our thinking. Sorry, that was a long answer. And I know it's not easy. We've been working on this. Everyone in this room has been working on this for a very long time. Yes. That room. Right. I've just handed out the draft for the Travel and Learn flyer. It's that new. We became a business on May 7th. And my partner is Jan Rumi. So I turn that over to you. And we've piloted, as I said, a couple of the study tour efforts. But we're really launching in 2008. Hi, Florence. Here and there, one was a geologist and one was, anyway, an architect and so forth. And the result was the students were supposed to be created.
So I thought that was good. And as a result of that, I got interested in the Wailea-Charleston. So it does go on and on.
Oh, yes, I think they do. And it's really worth a visit to Wailea. It's worth a visit to Seagull Schools and see the shared adult daycare and preschool. I think there are many programs out there we haven't identified, and I'm hoping that we can identify those and create, again, a hooey of wonderful programs. But I think also they don't need to be programs, and I think that's why I started with the coloring phenomenon. I mean, here I don't think anyone would have said this is an intergenerational program. It was in a natural setting, an opportunity for different generations to get together, and by whoever decided it was more than just about selling coloring books, but an opportunity to bring people together to color, to take lessons, to have contests. That was really quite brilliant.
I think the idea was being creative.
Yes. Any other questions?
This is a question, but you know, you go way back to when you were a child, and that was intergenerational, you know, families and the aunties and everybody, and that's the wine way. I lived at Queen Emma Gardens, and we lived downtown, and anyway, at another building. It's intergenerational, people live there.
I think but I think they are becoming rarer, and I think it's interesting because we might have an image of a country like Japan that we would think it was natural, but many of the people we talked to, young adults, said they didn't know their grandparents. And we found many men in our coming to volunteer in our preschools, and they said for them it was an opportunity to nurture and hold a child because they were of a generation that they weren't expected to. And so that this was such a wonderful experience for them at their age to be able to do that. And so we were quite surprised at the number of men who came in to the preschool. Are we integrating the older person with the disability? Very definitely, and as I said, the shared site is a beautiful example of that. The shared site is often an adult daycare center with people who might have pre-dementia or Alzheimer's, who are in wheelchairs. What we have found across the world is that that's a wonderful age to bring the two together. The little children, if it's permissible, climb up on the high chair. They're fascinated by the walkers. They ask very straightforward questions. And they're given very straightforward answers, such as one of the questions Michael Chang always loves is when a little girl went up and poked the tummy of an older woman and said, "Are you pregnant?" And she said, "No, I'm just old." But what we also found, and Chuck Larson, who is the president of Seagull Schools, will tell you that by bringing those children together with the older person, it's not a sense that here is a frail person. By being there, by working with the child, it's a mutual learning process, and it's a mutual enhancement. and it's picking the right activities. And we learned that the hard way. We wanted to do a gardening project, and I had a student from HPU and one from UH and one from Santa Cruz who came all the way over and wanted to work with me. And we said, let's do a gardening project. And boy, the first two times it didn't work at all. The kids saw a centipede and they were running across the yard, and the older people were sort of sleeping in their wheelchairs. And it was that intentionality that we learned to put the children at the same height with the wheelchair. We had to have multiple activities as people became tired or bored of the activity and make sure and kept that moving. We had to go out and buy tiny little watering cans because the older person who was frail and the child couldn't lift a watering can, and we were afraid that with the hoses the parents would get very upset if everybody was soaking wet. But we had to really think about how are we going to make this interaction work. It did work. And I remember one gentleman who really rather spend his time sitting out in the courtyard and smoking, finally becoming very engaged. And he said, you know, I go home every night and pray for the growth of these plants. And suddenly he did let us know that gardening was something he had loved very much. I had mentioned the program with children and Alzheimer's patients. I think sometimes we hesitate to bring children into these settings. There's a wonderful program in Findlay, Ohio, that goes from the residents all the way through hospice. And Dr. Rosebrook insisted that the children could be included all the way through. And she does. And it's been very successful. And I think some of that is perhaps breaking through some of our own blinders on what we think is appropriate or not appropriate. And what we found is that that's up to the individual, the family's own values. We don't want to push anything on to a family that may be uncomfortable for them. But we found if they say, it's okay, include my children, or it's okay, include my auntie, that the connection can be very magical for both. Okay. Does that answer your question at all? I'm just saying there are no barriers. There's no barriers. Right. Yes, and I didn't answer your question. And I think my answer to your question is there are meetings and conferences and summits all over the world. I've been to two in Japan, and the awareness is a tremendous aha in places like Japan. I mean, within the last 2 years, I'm astounded how different the train stations and subway stations are. I mean, I used to just think, what are they going to do? But they're putting in those elevators and they're putting in those ramps, and I've seen tremendous change and wonderful changing stations for babies, because of course now with zero population growth, they want mothers to and they want mothers and fathers to have children, and so now they're saying we are also a child-friendly community. A lot of people do come here and two things when they come to Hawaii and look at our facilities. One, they always comment, of course, on the American Disabilities Act and what that's done for accessibility. But the other is they look at our schools, and I know we complain so much about our schools, but they go, you have so much space. It's wonderful to see these children able to run around. And I know, Betty, at Ohana English Preschool, it's a pretty tiny little space for all those children. It really was. So space is also a premium in a lot of these countries that we haven't had to deal with as well. So I really want to thank you for letting me come and take your afternoon. But I feel very impassioned by the fact that I think if we put an intergenerational lens on so much of what we're doing, that it will help us look at perhaps unique ways, and both formal and informal ways, of strengthening our communities. Thank you.